You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, as is our wont, Ivan and Dick,
yes,
we speak to varied people across the landscape in Australia and sometimes overseas.
Correct.
And today's guest is no exception. I don't know a lot about this man, but he seemed like a person of interest.
Indeed.
Because as I understand it, as we speak to him, he's holed up in the Russian embassy in Sydney. I don't know if that's true or not. But his name is Simeon Bolkov.
Correct.
Boykov.
We can ask him about that.
And he goes under the title of the
Aussie Cossack.
I hope you read my lips. Thank you very much. So welcome, Simeon, to You Cannot Be Serious.
It's a pleasure to join you, gentlemen.
Now, Simeon is your... Simeon, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, Simeon. Look, growing up in primary school in Sydney... at Croydon Public, at Trinity Grammar School, St Andrew's Cathedral School, they used to call me Simon because it's just easier.
Okay.
Anglicised version of Simeon, but I don't mind Simeon.
Righto, well, we'll try and call you what your actual name is, so Simeon. Now, are you, as we speak, incarcerated, if you like, in the Russian embassy in Sydney?
Well, indeed, for the last 483 days, I've been holed up. Inside the Russian consulate in Sydney, indeed.
For 400 and... seriously?
Yeah, it's a long time, since December 2022.
What's the reason for that? How did you end up in the Russian embassy? Can you tell us a little bit about the background, mate? A few of our viewers might not know, or listeners might not know about it.
Well, me being one of them.
Sure, I mean, if people probably would have heard of me as the Aussie Cossack back in the days of lockdowns. We had lockdowns, we had protests, and we were part of the movement pushing back against the police intimidation tactics and the government lockdowns. If we can remember those days, so I was in the construction industry. Speaking of footy, actually, I started off working with Chris Anderson, the former Bulldogs coach, and Kevin Moore in the Labor Hire game. But by that stage, when the lockdown started, I was doing my own thing. We had a small company, and we had about 30, 40 blokes on the tools. And the government started then cracking down on all the industries. First to go were hospitality, hairdressers and cafes and all this all these industries. And construction was last.
Yep.
When they finally got to us, we did not take it lightly. I mean, Western Sydney is full of tradesmen with utes and four-wheel drives, and I was one of them, and we weren't happy. And that Saturday, I remember when they let us back to work finally, I was flying a Australian flag out of the sunroof, defiantly. And that was a day where the police were putting roadblocks all around the city trying to stop people from protesting. And that was the first video where the police pulled me over and it went live streamed, you know, millions of views. It was some very entertaining banter back and forth with the cops. And that was when sort of the Aussie Cossack concept was born. And the police decided to keep pulling me over. They red lighted my number plates, which meant every time I drove past them, they pulled me over. And I just kept switching my mobile phone to live stream mode on YouTube, and we got some very entertaining videos over the years until finally, yeah.
So you might be called the Aussie Cossack, but you weren't riding a horse, you were driving a car.
You're right. It was a black Land Cruiser, and the first appearance of the word Aussie Cossack was in 2014. The Daily Mail suggested that I had flown to Ukraine to support the pro-Russian rebels and somehow tried to connect me to that tragic shooting down of MH17. And that was the first time the Aussie Cossack appeared in my headline. I ended up taking them for defamation, and I can't disclose the outcome. All I can say, I was pleased with the outcome.
You won, yeah.
And
So we'll get on to the Russian and Mr. Putin and Ukraine, and we'll get on to all that in a minute. I'm just still querulous, querying. You've been in the Russian embassy for 400 and something days. You wouldn't have been just put in there, or you wouldn't have just sought asylum if you were driving a black Land Cruiser down with an Australian flag sticking out the window.
Well, you're right, Sam. So that was the prelude to the story. That's how I became sort of on the radar and became, you could say, notorious with the police. Well, look, that was the beginning. That turned into a fully fledged, you could say, protest movement on the streets. We had big
protests. Simeon, if I may, just I'm only partially educated. I'm a simple man. So you were driving your car for no other reason. The police pulled you up because you had an Australian flag out the sunroof. There was no other reason they pulled you up. And they were you out of your territory? Were you straying more than 15K from home with more than two people in your car? Were you breaking the lockdown rules?
That was the allegation, that I was outside my 5Ks, which then was actually withdrawn, and I had a valid reason. It's strange that we talk about this these days, but they conceded that the construction industry was allowed to work on that weekend, and that was the beginning. Now, the police campaign against me went on for years. I got a firearms prohibition order put on me, which meant that the police would pull me over all the time, raid my house with the Raptor Squad and the SWAT teams and detectives waiting outside my house, camping, and that went on for years. And then finally, it all came to a head in May 2022, just after the Russian-Ukraine conflict started, where at one of those big freedom protests, we had about 10,000 people at Customs House in Circular Quay. During a speech to the crowd, I intentionally briefed a suppression order and named a person who was before the courts charged with some terrible crimes against children. Now, I had my reasons for naming him. The police did not appreciate that. That was live streamed on YouTube, and the court slapped me with a 10-month custodial sentence. That's the most serious, heaviest sentence anyone ever in the Australian legal system has got for breaching a non-publication order. Usually,
so, Simeon, if there's a court order or there's a court instruction out that you're not allowed to name a paedophile until either he has or she has been convicted, or you are just gratuitously naming a paedophile, that is surely against the law.
It's against the law, and that's why I pled guilty, and I knew what I was doing was against the law. Did I agree with it? No. Did I have what I considered exceptional reasons for doing so? I still believe so, yes, and my time.
Why did you mention in a speech that someone was a pedophile? Because you were just trying to slag them or slander them, were you?
No. This case is currently still before the courts. It's September, it's going to hearing. And look, I intend to, after September, when the general public is allowed to hear the full story, they'll be quite shocked as to what actually happened. Now, I weighed up the pros and cons, and I knew that I'm going to be in trouble, and I decided to name this person. It's a very difficult circumstance, but when the Court of Appeal heard, when I was taken into custody, maximum security, but finally, after we got an appeal date, the higher judge agreed that I did have mitigating circumstances as to why I decided to do that. And I was released after having served 4 months. So I was released from jail. And so there is already grounds there as to why the higher court overturned the local court's decision. And got out of jail. I was only at large for a few months until again, and we're getting closer to why I'm in the consulate now. Until again, I was involved in an incident. Funny enough, I was actually on the way to fly out of Australia to Russia. I was actually trying to leave the country. And
why were you trying to leave the country? To escape legal action, or that things had been charged with you? You were absconding.
Not yet. I did eventually abscond. But at this point, I was still on parole from the suppression order. And at that time in Russia, in the war zone, a very close person to me, my compadre, so I'm the godfather to his daughter, who was killed. He was a priest, a Russian Orthodox military priest, and he was killed in a U.S. HIMARS missile strike near the city of Kherson. That event gave grounds for the parole board to grant exceptional circumstances. Leave to because it's very unusual if you're on parole to get to leave the country.
Yep.
And believe it or not, they had a special meeting in Canberra. I was told that there was some very serious government agencies involved, and they decided, yeah, let him go, get rid of him, send him.
Yep.
This guy's a troublemaker. He's a nuisance, as the media and police would call me. He's a pest. He's a public menace, and get rid of him. So bought my tickets. Here I am in town hall. In December of 2022 at the Kathmandu store in the city, you know, in Town Hall Square.
Yes, yep. Buying
a warm jacket from Moscow, some thermal underwear, some warm socks, a warm puffy jacket. Right, made my purchase, and with my wife, I walk out onto Town Hall Square, and lo and behold, there's this mob of Ukrainian supporters, mad Ukrainians, with screaming, Russian is a terrorist state, Russia this, Russia that. And here I am, by myself against all these guys, and of course, being who I am, I couldn't walk away. I had to start filming them. I turned on the live stream. Thousands of people start tuning in, and I'm filming them. And as we know, it's not illegal to film in a public place in Australia. And very similar to the Barilaro incident in Manly, where he assaulted a cameraman because he didn't like the cameraman, doesn't mean the cameraman is wrong. You may not like someone filming in a public place, but they are allowed to do so. I was attacked by one of the Ukrainian protesters who was holding a pole.
Yeah.
He grabbed me. Look, I pushed him away as a form of self-defense.
Yeah. Solidly you pushed him away. You assaulted him.
It was a solid
him.
Push.
Yep.
Look, he assaulted me. I defended myself.
Right.
I had to. It wasn't a punch. It wasn't over the top. Unfortunately for him, he attacked me while I was on the stairs, and therefore he lost his balance. And he fell on the floor like a Brazilian soccer player trying to get a penalty kick in front of a goalpost.
Yes.
And it worked. It worked.
All right. So you, when you say these mad Ukrainians, they were just protesting against their country being invaded by Russia. So they had every right to do that, I presume, as long as it was peaceful. And you have every right to be a pro-Russian advocate, which is what I presume you are. Why are you an Australian citizen?
Born in Australia, so my great grandparents.
Born in Australia.
So you're an Aussie.
Grandparents are buried. Yeah, that's why they call me the Aussie Cossack. Look.
So you're half Russian, half Aussie. So you consider yourself a patriot of both countries? So you're a proud Aussie patriot as well?
Mate, I love Australia and I love Russia. I was born here. As I said, my great grandparents are buried in Australia, been here for a few generations. Yep. Mother was born in Geelong. I grew up, had a normal childhood, played footy for the first 15 at Trinity Grammar School. And I was always. I was always interested and had a love for my historical homeland, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up in the church, in the Russian Orthodox Church, and Russian school on Saturdays. But some people have suggested that I should now lose the Aussie part of my Aussie Cossack moniker, since Vladimir Putin in October gave me Russian citizenship. So I'm now a dual citizen, Russian and Australian citizenship. That seemed to upset a lot of people, and there have been suggestions from some of my opponents that I should be stripped of Australian citizenship.
Yeah, I haven't quite got past. I haven't quite just got onto the Russian part of this and Vladimir Putin. So you sound like you're an innocent member of society wandering about just minding your own business with a flag sticking out the top of your black car. You're sure you're not an anarchist?
Anarchist.
You're sure you're not thumbing your nose at everything that is thrown at you. Being an Australian, you don't seem to embrace the country's laws, or have I got that wrong?
Well, I think it was every Australian's duty to fight back against the lockdowns, and time has shown us that those people that took the you could say responsibility to do that whilst others sat at home wearing masks and watching press conferences on the ABC.
Yeah.
Those people that fought back did it for the rest of us.
I fought, but I was the same. I thought the lockdowns in this particular state were disgraceful, and we make world headlines by being under some sort of jackboot system here. Sam protested yourself. I protested, but I'm not into actually gratuitously breaking the law. And when I'm told whether you don't like the government's decision or not, if you don't like the government, vote them out. When I was told not to do this, I'm not out there trying to break the law.
Would it be fair to say, Cossack, that you sort of, I guess you were harassed by the police to begin with because you filmed some viral videos that were very popular online, and then you began to get some traction as Aussie Cossack, and then you linked yourself to the freedom movement and you became one of the major people who spoke out against the lockdowns. But then you also had this politics that was pro-Russian. So in a sense, you seem to attract the heat of the authorities a little bit more than, say, some other protesters, say, like Monica Smith.
I can agree with everything you said, except for the word lynch myself to the freedom movement. I think that's...
I didn't say leech. I just said connected. You know.
Connected. Well,
linked.
Look,
linked, yep.
Linked.
Not lynched.
Misheard you.
Yeah.
Now, we'll just draw that. Now, in those days, you're right, the videos that I was making were very popular with millions of views. And that YouTube channel, which was then later shut down, that was bringing like $30,000 a month. And I was pouring that back into the freedom movement, paying for stages and rallies and protests and sending supplies and portaloos and funding sound systems.
Sorry, Simeon, can just back up for a sec. Did I get that correct? The YouTube channel was making $30,000 a month.
Yeah, at its peak. Yeah, it was a very
good channel. It was huge. I remember it.
All right, we'll have to discuss how this works. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, look, the reason they closed the channel in the end was for a video that I posted from the Senate, which was talking about the excess deaths in Australia, and they didn't like that. And of all the things I posted on that channel, police interactions, protests and whatnot, that was that... excess deaths from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which I reposted, that they decided to terminate the channel for good. So I was forced onto other platforms that were thriving on Telegram and other places now, which is not a problem. But of course, of all the platforms, YouTube was the most user-friendly and easily accessible for the general public. So it's a shame.
Were you banned from Twitter or X as it is now?
I was never on X at that time. I never really looked at it as... I've only entered the X game recently, and that's going well. I think there's been about 20 million views in the past 2 weeks on my channel. So that's going
quite strong.
So you
weren't banned from Twitter before?
No, I never was. No.
So it's fair to say you have a huge following around the world, and particularly also in Russia.
Yeah. In Russia, there's quite strong links. And obviously, you can imagine the Russians appreciate that people overseas are sticking up for the Russian cause staunchly, but there are a lot of Russians overseas. It's said there's about 20 to 30 million.
A large diaspora, which is like a...
Massive. I think it's the second largest diaspora around the world.
So you were one of the most popular people within the freedom movement who were opposing the lockdowns, opposing the vaccines, but you also had this politics that was, pro-Russian, pro-Putin. So do you think that particularly upset the authorities?
Absolutely. It's a double whammy. It's bad enough if you're some unvaccinated, notorious ringleader. But then if you're unvaccinated and you're also a pro-Russian, you could say, apologist or antagonist, as they call me, or agitator, as I've been named in the media, you got a double whammy on you.
So we might just ask you in a minute why you are a pro-Russian Putin backer for invading Ukraine. You might have a very good reason for that. What did you rally strongly against The Voice about the yes-no vote?
Yeah, definitely. At that time, I was already holed up in the consulate well and truly into my stint here. And
what were your thoughts on that?
The Voice campaign, I think it was a joke. I think it shouldn't have ever been...
No, we campaigned against The Voice on this program. We said it was we didn't think it was right. It was a divisive document. We're all Australians. I'm wondering why you got into trouble for that. Well, did you take it to another level?
Well, I wouldn't say I got into trouble. I mean, there were allegations again by the media that the Voice campaign was somehow being supported by pro-Putin activists. But that was just the media, I think, trying to taint the no side by trying to bring Putin into it. I
mean, like they did with Trump and the whole accusations they have with Trump that he was some kind of Russian spy, which is obviously nonsense.
But it got to the point where Mike Burgess himself, the head of ASIO, after the referendum, cleared the air and said, no, there was no foreign interference. There was no Russian collusion. Russia is not responsible for the no vote winning. That's where it got to, because they were clutching at straws, and there was a few outrageous interviews, for example, from Sharon Grosch at The Age, Sydney Morning Herald, trying to suggest that, oh, the Russians are behind this, Russian collusion. Why would Russia care about The Voice? Well, Russia doesn't even know. I mean, I think Putin was asked in an interview, what do you think about Australia? And this is long ago. And his answer was, well, I don't think about Australia.
Yeah, well, that'd be absolutely right. No one knows we're here. So as you sit in the Russian embassy, do you have any arrest warrants out for you as we speak?
Presently.
As we speak,
Yeah, so on the 14th of December, when I was due to fly out, where I had permission from the parole board to go to Russia, that was when that incident outside Kathmandu at Town Hall happened.
Yeah, and when you pushed someone.
A fracas. Well, look at the footage. I was attacked. I pushed him away.
Fair enough.
Think the pub test, I think, would be in my favour here. The people would say, look, it's fair and square. He's defended himself.
I've seen it.
What was the timeline? You're at the front of Town Hall. Were you going to catch a train to the airport? Is that what you were going to do?
My plane was in about, 10 hours from there. Tickets booked, everything, bags packed, just buying the last essentials. My wife was going to drop me off at the airport, and here I was. It was a terrible setup. It was absolutely bad timing, and it was perfect for the police, because they grabbed me and they said, right, Boykov, we'll give you bail, because it was only a common assault. It was only a push and shove. There was nothing serious. I said, we'll give you bail, but you got to throw in your passport. And I said, well, what choice do I have? I'm going to miss the plane either way.
Mm-hmm.
And send my passport to them. Now, my passport is still at Bay Street Police Station in the city, my Australian passport. They've still got it. And they gave me bail. Now, that evening, sort of somewhere inside, I still sort of had some hope that I could fly out to Russia. So we headed down to the Pullman at the airport with my wife, and we stayed at the airport. I was thinking somehow I can still fly out. I was hoping for a miracle. And it was thanks to the fact that I was staying at the Pullman that night next to the airport. A nice five-star hotel, actually. I've got to give them a good free ad here. The police came to my house with three cop cars and a paddy wagon. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call. Where are you? And I said, hang on, you guys gave me bail. Why are you after me again? And they said, we want you for the suppression order. We want you to serve out the rest of the sentence because you're on parole and you've committed an offence. Hand yourself in. Look, I said to the commander, I said, I'll be there in 5 minutes. See you later. Bang, hang up, and bang, gunned it to the consulate. I was not going to give them the opportunity to take me into custody again. And I'll give you the reason why.
And that's where we are.
That's where we are. I'll tell you the reason why. Because when I was in custody last time, they put a special classification on me, which is called NSI, National Security Interest Inmate. It's a very rare classification. I think 0.01% of the prisoners have it. It's reserved for terrorists, spies, very serious criminals. You got bikies, murderers that don't have NSI. They just have EHR, extreme high risk. Now, NSI inmates, they're transported in special bulletproof Land Cruisers in a bulletproof capsule with their legs shackled, their arms shackled, wearing an orange jumpsuit like they do in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah,
and there's just severe restrictions. If a normal prisoner is allowed to make phone calls, receive visits, NSI, you lose whatever rights you have. They strip you right down, and it's very difficult to be in custody and, for example, to fight a defense against charges that may be before you, because you're so restricted. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to give them the opportunity, and I don't even know why I would be in NSI if all I did was breach a suppression order on a YouTube video. Doesn't add up there.
Once again, are you telling me that you are holed up in the Russian embassy for 400 odd days on the basis that you didn't want to go to court for an assault charge at a demonstration? Is that why you went to the embassy?
And the suppression order,
Yeah, there was only two things. It was, as you said, the assault charge at that protest and the suppression order parole.
Well, you're correct. Well, is it that's like smashing a walnut with a hammer? I mean, you've incarcerated yourself. How many? What would be the penalty for the assault charge? It'd probably just be a misdemeanor and a fine, wouldn't it?
You're right. You probably would not have any jail time in a normal circumstance.
Yes,
and you're right. And probably should have just, if I was looking at saving time and being frugal with my time, I could have just let it run and let natural justice take its path. Even though, even if I lost and they slammed me with a heavy sentence for that incident, it probably wouldn't have been more than 6 months, I would imagine. Even if it was the worst magistrate you could get, you wouldn't get a lot of time. It's not a very serious.
So what is your end game? Is it you've protested against the lockdown and you haven't been, which I did, and you're not happy with the COVID, which I wasn't, and you're not happy with the voice, which I wasn't. What is your end game? You're just going to sit out your life in the Russian embassy until what? Someone does a prisoner swap with you. Mr. Putin says, oh, well, we'll take Mr. Bolkov back and we'll send over... I don't know. What is the end game here for you, Simeon?
It's a great question. It's something I think about all the time. Where to from here, how to get out of here, and how to return back to normal life. Now, I don't think I can ever return back to normal life. That's the first thing. I think
in Australia.
Since I've been here, as you probably noticed, I have not been sitting here quietly twiddling my thumbs. I have been working 16-hour days and taking part in. I'll say it openly and honestly, taking part in the informational war, fighting against the misinformation propaganda which is directed at Russia, and being a Russian apologist. It's true. I do defend Russia. I do defend Russia in the media, in the news, and to be honest, there are not many people that do that overseas. And I've been doing that. Now, I think that since that time, just like Assange, because they first got him also on an assault charge, which was later withdrawn, mm-hmm. It was after he was incarcerated in the embassy, in the Ecuadorian embassy, where he started doing WikiLeaks and so forth. That's when they hit him up with these big charges. So now the question is, are there bigger charges that the government is preparing against me?
Like espionage.
It would be extremely easy to slap me with a foreign interference charge or foreign influence charge. In fact, my lawyer was reading that legislation with me, Mark Davies, same lawyer as Assange had, and he said, Boykoff, this legislation is written for you. This is like, you know, textbook. And there aren't many people.
So why do you say Putin was justified in invading Ukraine? I presume you say that.
Well, I think...
do you not?
The first thing we have to establish is people talk about an invasion of Ukraine.
Oh, well.
This began in 2014 when it was the Ukrainians attacked their own regions who weren't in agreement with the coup d'etat, which they did. And Russia just tried to protect the Russian-speaking citizens. In fact, yesterday Putin declared that 3.2 million Russian passports have been issued in the new territories which Russia has liberated. But all of these people can't be wrong.
Okay, well, maybe I misspoke. So you say Putin didn't invade Ukraine. What did you say he did? He's just trying to take it back.
I think he's liberating those regions where Russia is welcome, where the people always lived under Russia, pre-1991. They lived under the Russian Empire, under the Soviet Union. And those people in Donetsk, Lugansk, Crimea, Zaporozhye, Kherson, they genuinely want to be with Russia.
Is that Donbass? Is that region called the Donbass?
Yeah. You're right, Donbass. Putin hasn't gone after west of Ukraine. He hasn't invaded Lvov or Ivano-Frankivsk, the border area with Poland and Hungary. He's got no interest in that because he knows that those people there hate Russia. They want to be with Ukraine. No one's arguing with that. It's those areas that are traditionally have always historically been with Russia, where the people speak Russian. They have been persecuted under the Ukrainian regime since 2014.
And so,
there's some people that want to be Russians and be under Russian control, and there's some people in Ukraine that don't. Putin is now requiring people who don't wish to be part of Russia, who wish to remain Ukrainians, he is by force getting them to... getting them to attain his will.
Well, he has invaded parts of Ukraine, and obviously some people in that part of the Ukraine might still wish to be Ukrainian, I think is the point.
Yeah, well, if we look, it's a good point. We talk about statistics, and look, fine.
He has invaded part of Ukraine, what was considered Ukraine, at least until 2014. But his reason for it is he felt that ethnic Russians were under attack in the, is it the East? Yes, the East.
So isn't that like being a little bit pregnant? You can't invade some part of Ukraine and annex them and let other people who don't wish you to be annexed. Isn't that, you can't have...
He did annex Crimea, though, in 2014, and that the West let him get away with, correct?
Yeah, the Crimea referendum in 2014 was relatively bloodless, and yep. The Ukrainian government completely was not prepared for such a scenario, and that was a success. Now, it's after 2014 that the Ukrainian government, the new Ukrainian government, don't forget the real Ukrainian president, Yanukovych, was overthrown in a coup d'etat, and the coup d'etat was sponsored by Victoria Nuland and the CIA. They yep. spent $5
billion. It's a CIA coup. It's an illegal CIA coup that overthrew Yanukovych in 2014. And then the new government, which is led by globalists, begins attacking ethnic Russians in the East. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And it was actually people, Russian patriots, even such as myself, we criticize Putin. So don't think we think Putin's the best. We sometimes criticize him. And here is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that Putin should have, straight after Crimea, kept going and liberated all of those regions, Odessa, Kharkov. These places were waiting for Russia. They were waiting. They were raising Russian flags. There was mass Russian demonstrations, locals pouring out into the street, carrying Russian flags and so forth. And Russia stood by and did nothing. And all of these pro-Russian activists, a lot of them were been executed. They were killed. They're still in prison, some of them, if they survive. And eventually, because Russia sort of gave the Ukrainians enough time to collaborate with NATO, the Ukrainians were able to build up their military. Mm-hmm. And hence, by the time we got to 2022, the Ukrainians are actually quite strong.
And yeah, they're only strong because, aren't they? Because Britain and France USA. And Australia and the United States are giving them billions of dollars to fight the Russians. Why are those countries doing? Why are we sending? I noticed you.
Good question, Sam.
You didn't. I noticed you didn't take kindly to us sending over Bushman Land Rovers or something.
And Bushmasters.
Bushmasters or something. You thought
that Abraham's was, tanks. Yep, from America.
Why is those countries sending money over to Ukraine?
From a Russian perspective, I think the West collectively, in some manifestation or another, attacks Russia or provocates Russia into a war every 20 to 30 years. That's the Russian perspective. And this is nothing new, especially with that part of the world. If you look back to the 1850s and the Crimean Wars, which Australia was actually also involved in financing, the cannons on display, the Russian cannons, which were captured at Sevastopol, or at Centennial Park, and at the Victoria Barracks in Melbourne, sorry, not Victoria, I think it's called the Knox Barracks, is it? They're on display. These are all trophies from the Crimean Wars. And since then, there's always been this animosity, this mutual suspicion between Russia and the West. And these wars have been going on. The Russian-Japanese War, perfect example. Japan was a relatively weak country. It was not a major power. And it was backed in 1904 by the Americans, by the British. They gave it the best technology, the best naval technology available at the time to fight the Russians.
Is that Russia-Sinese War? Is that right?
But there's another example of where Western powers back a proxy to fight Russia. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter for the West who they're using. And in this situation, the Ukrainians are the proxy. That in mind, Biden does not care how many Ukrainians die, and they are pumping Ukraine full of weapons.
It does seem like that they're sacrificing the country of Ukraine to fight Russia. Like, it seems like Ukraine is, at the moment, has run out of young Russians to fight Russia. You know what I mean? Sorry, run out of young Ukraine. Like, it seems like they're destroying Ukraine. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like Zelensky's really... He's going to have... What's he going to have to rule over if he was to succeed? And how can he succeed against a superpower like Russia?
Look, the pre-war population of Ukraine was 42 million. Now we are down to about 19 million. That's not because all of them died. A lot of them left. Around about 6 million actually fled to Russia. And you know, figure that out. If Russia's the bad guy, why did 6 million Ukrainians run to Russia?
But there was also a lot of Russians that left Russia, and in the week leading up to having conscription, they all fled to Dubai and some of the other Eastern European cities. But look, that's well and great, that problem. But I think, Simeon, your big problem is how you're going to get out of the Russian consulate there. What's your end game?
All right, here we go. There's a few options here. There's a few options. One option, lately in the news, Penny Wong, our foreign minister, Albanese, and a whole raft of political elite, you could say media personalities, have been campaigning for the release of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. It's been a one-year anniversary now since he's been incarcerated in Russia on charges of espionage.
Yep.
The Russians are holding him. Australia seems to be very interested in him. In fact, the Australian government is more worried about this Gershkovich, this American Wall Street Journal guy, than they are about Assange. If you look at the activity, I think Murdoch and News Corp have really gone into bat for Evan Gershkovich. Well, my proposal is, as you could imagine, I've probably got a bit of sway with the Russians, and if they're happy to have me at the consulate, and Vladimir Putin has given me citizenship by presidential decree, it obviously means that they're interested in my persona to make sure I don't get locked up again. I'm proposing a swap.
You're of fighting age. You could just end up straight on the front line there in Ukraine.
I think I'm already on the front line. What I'm doing now is being on the front lines, because this war is, most importantly, an informational war.
So,
and if we can defeat the enemy in the media and in the social media and in the information,
so you're a media source.
So Trump said that if he had been the president, Putin would never have invaded Ukraine. Do you believe that, and why would he say that?
And what do you think of Trump?
Well, hang on.
So he just today, maybe 1 hour ago, he said that he will be able to settle the conflict within minutes of entering the Oval Office.
How?
He knows both sides.
Do you believe that?
I don't think he's referring to a military option. I don't think he's going to bring the US aircraft carriers and
of course, you just
somebody.
Negotiate. And Putin wants certain things. You meet him halfway.
Well, I mean, the front line has been stable since November 2022. John Ruddick, New South Wales Member of Parliament, tweeted about this the other day. He said, if you look at from a satellite map of the conflict zone, it really hasn't moved, plus minus, since 2022 November. The small gains either side, but huge amounts of losses, right? Ukraine is losing a lot of men, and it is tragic because these are we do consider them as our men. They're Russian. Why do they fight hard? It's like a black humor. We say, why do the Ukrainians fight hard? Why do they never surrender? Because they're Russian.
Exactly.
Because they learned to fight under Russia.
So it's a brother's war. Simeon. It's a brother's war, isn't it? It's terrible.
Simeon.
It is a tragedy. I think we can all agree on that.
So, Simeon, if you or Trump says that he could settle this within a minute of becoming the president with Putin... because you wouldn't through warfare, through a negotiation, why wouldn't the present regime in America want this to happen?
Because they're warmongers.
Well, why wouldn't they want this to happen?
The Biden administration, I don't think it's run by Biden.
No, absolutely.
Who do you think runs it?
Well, who's benefiting from this? Look at the share prices of the American military-industrial complex, the big... weapons companies. They're loving this. They are loving this. This is the biggest war since World War II for them. And not only are they cleaning out their own old storage warehouses, all their old armor, all their old shells, bullets, they're actually now got contracts from Muppets like Albanese for hundreds of billions of dollars worth of submarines, high-mast missiles, weapons. It's a global arms race now. And Albo is one of the guys, as Keating said, who's the only one paying in the room. He won't get those submarines until 2040, 2050.
Yep.
But the problems that this has caused means that it's very beneficial to the US economy.
So,
they need this war.
So Simeon, just again, you're saying that Trump would meet Putin and he'd say, righto, you've got enough territory, go back to Russia and leave the Ukrainians alone, and that's the end of it, you're saying. Is that how it's going to end, is it, if Trump
becomes... I think if what you're saying, if Trump says, let's just call it a day, North Korea, South Korea, demarcation line style. Whatever you've got, you can have. Ukraine, whatever you've defended, you can have. And everyone shakes hands and walks away like gentlemen. I think that would be the best option because Russia is not trying to attack the rest of Ukraine.
And you'd have to discipline NATO, who's had a big part in this. Obviously, NATO aggression, where they want to make Ukraine part of NATO, that was one of the reasons Putin attacked, because that was an agreement made with Yeltsin back in the day that NATO would not move further towards Russia. And it's done nothing but that in the last 30 years.
Well, exactly right. In 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed and the Russians were really conned into giving up all of these republics and giving them freedom.
Yep.
Let's not forget that all of this land, Ukraine, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, all of the Central Asian republics, Kazakhstan, the Caucasus republics, Armenia, Georgia, all these countries that were used to be part of Russia and the Soviet Union, Russia didn't get them for free. Millions of Russian men died fighting for every meter of soil. And Russians who are patriotic, such as myself, we detest Gorbachev. We detest Yeltsin, that he did that he gave up, because the American CIA were all over the Russians at that time in 91, and that was their brilliant move. They destroyed the Soviet Union. They brought in McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and American values.
And the oligarchs. And the oligarchs robbed Russia of its assets too.
Raped the country. And it's only when Putin came in on the 31st of December 1999, finally, and they weren't Russian, he started taking. Yeah. Exactly right. And so that's why Putin is popular, because
He fought the oligarchs.
So, Simeon, are China and Iran friends of Putin's?
Definitely.
Yeah. So they are proxy adversaries of the United States for that very reason.
Well, Iran is very openly supporting Russia, and it was very good to have Iran's drone technology. Russia was caught off guard in the beginning that their drones weren't up to scratch. Thanks to Iran, Russia has really reclaimed a lot of that lost territory in the technological space. Funny as it is, but Russia wasn't big on drones. Iran was. And they're very openly supporting Russia. And that's the link.
How would you describe Putin's politics? Do you consider him a nationalist? Is he a national Bolshevist, or how would you describe him?
No, certainly not a Bolshevik.
So he's not a Marxist in any way. He revolts against that system, even though he was a former KGB agent.
No, I mean, I think all of the Russian patriots, they have a soft spot for the good old days of the Soviet Union, which doesn't make them Marxists. It's not so much that they're interested in communism or Marxism or the teachings of Lenin.
Yeah.
I think there's nostalgia, and I share that nostalgia.
Nostalgia
of the country that was great, the borders that were right up to the Polish border, or actually in some instances including half of Poland. And we lament losing all of that and losing our people, losing people in Ukraine. A lot of the millions of them wanted to be with Russia. It's not their fault that they woke up one day in 1991, looked out the window, and they were living in a different country. There's so many tragic situations like this.
Okay, now listen. So listen. You reckon, you hold up there, why don't you just ask them, why don't you just ask the authorities to deport you? Or can't you be deported?
My opponents...
the police, the law.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my opponents, the Ukrainian activists, they often, hashtag deport Boykov, deport the Kozak. You know what? Why not? Deport me. Let's do a deal. And I think it's important to talk about this so the establishment understands that I'm willing. Now that I have two passports, Claire O'Neill, the Home Affairs Minister.
Yep, so you're happy to be deported, you're saying?
Well
why wouldn't they deport you? Say, right, all everything you've done forgiven, or the charge of the assault charge, I don't know, they might fine you or take your property away from you. Wouldn't it be a good idea just to leave the country if you're just that dissatisfied with it, Simeon?
Look, I love Australia, and even if I get deported, I still call Australia home. Of course, it's a great country, great people. I love travelling, I love the people. I was very connected with the people on the ground during the lockdowns, and there was some great Australian spirit in those moments that we shared.
And if I could simplistically say this, you're saying that you reckon Putin would be happy with the Ukraine that he's already invaded and gotten and has under control, and he would leave the rest of Ukraine to the Ukrainians. And
that's Trump's plan, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you're saying I that's the simple explanation.
Yeah, that would be a way out of this. Well, whatever they've got, they've got. Look, those people, 3.2 million passports have been handed out there. Those people aren't going back under Zelensky. And we just got to call it a day. They fought hard. Well done to them. They look, they defended their interest, or Zelensky forced them to fight. Yep. I don't think they did it voluntarily, but there's certainly a lot of blood spilled. It should stop. Yep. The Russians are also taking losses. The Ukrainians are taking 10 times as many. And we don't want to see Ukrainians die. Look, Putin could have flattened Ukrainian cities in the first 3 days. They could have just bombed everything to annihilation. It didn't. Why? Because he looked at these people.
He didn't do a Gaza, did he? He didn't do what the Israelis
did. Now, here's a breath of fresh air, in case you think this is a male-dominated chat. Here is a person who is not a male. This is Sue Stanley, OAM, Olympic champion and gold medalist and four-time world aerobic champion. This is her.
But I don't understand. If you go to Russia, which you could go, don't you then have to give up your Australian passport?
Yeah, look, pleasure to speak with you. Look, the Home Affairs Minister, Claire O'Neill, has special powers in exceptional circumstances where it's in the national interest. She could strip me of Australian citizenship now that I'm a dual citizen. When I was just an Australian citizen by birth, which I was.
No, but isn't Russia saying that they don't allow a dual citizen?
No, Russia's so okay with it. Russia's okay with it. They're fine.
Yeah, I think they do.
Unless I go into politics in Russia and I try to go for the Russian parliament, then I can only have a Russian passport. So it's on the table. It's on the cards. For example, a deportation deal, direct to the airport, free passage. Yep. And, for example, in the escort of the diplomats to the ambassador's vehicle, straight to the airport, see you later.
See you later.
Put a stamp in the passport, deported, so Russians, never to return to Australia.
Russians are allowed to have two passports, dual nationality, are they?
Some.
Yeah, they are.
No,
yeah.
What do you mean some? I thought, to Sue's question, Russia only allow people to have one passport, and that is Russian. Is that not right?
They do allow dual citizenship.
Okay.
Yeah, they do.
This is it. We can go on and on, Simeon. We appreciate you speaking to us. I want to know, 450-odd days or whatever in the embassy, how long you could spend the rest of your life there? Like this could be, as we've said, a Julian Assange thing. What is going on? What is going on in your mind, mate? There's got to be, your life is effectively stopped. Where's your missus?
Do you feel like the Australian Assange, you know?
Where's your missus?
Look, I can't compare myself to Assange. He's a great journalist and a great freedom fighter, so it would be inappropriate to compare myself to him, but there could be some similarities in our circumstance. I've spoken to Assange's father. He's very supportive of my situation.
How's your wife going?
My wife's great. She's she actually really, really likes Australia. She's been here for 6 years. She came here from Russia.
Can she visit you in the embassy? Do you have conjugal visits?
Yeah, she visits me. Conjugal visits. She visits me, and I'll leave it at that. She's happy. She's fine. She's actually shopping today with her grandparents. She loves to travel. She's been to Daylesford, the 12 Apostles, the Blue Mountains, the Gold Coast. She's enjoying life. Right. There's no reason why she should be penalised.
This is on the wires. It says here, Russia doesn't allow dual citizenship with Australia, meaning Bolkov will have to choose his allegiance.
Ah.
That's
in the Sydney Morning Herald.
Is that fake news or true?
Well, I'm asking you, mate, that you say that it just says here, Russia doesn't allow dual citizenship with Australia. Why?
Yeah, that's a Sydney Morning Herald article. I know that one you're talking about.
Is it wrong?
They suggest that I should be stripped. Strictly speaking, Russia is not going to require me to show evidence that I've relinquished Australian citizenship. No, there's a bit of... maybe there's some technicalities.
Let me say that again. So that is wrong what they say. Russia does allow you to have dual citizenship with Australia.
Well, I can only give from my personal circumstance. No Russian KGB officer has tapped me on the shoulder and required me to hand over my Australian passport, no.
Right, so how long before you actually, I don't know what you're going to do to yourself, but for how long are you going to just sit in this place here and sort of theoretically rot?
Do you feel it's resolving your situation? I mean, is it near resolution? What are your thoughts?
Right, well, I think we need a resolution. I think the Australian government and I think the fact that we're talking about this is moving towards a resolution. If there's enough public interest and public pressure to say, look, get rid of him. And I don't mind if my opponents actually come into bat for me here. They might say, deport the bastard. We don't want Aussie Kozak here. And in fact, it's not even Aussie Kozak. It should be called the Russian Kozak. I'm sure they're saying that. He doesn't love Australia. He's obviously a Putin supporter. Get rid of him. One-way ticket. I'm sure, what did Pauline Hanson say? Love it or leave it. I have to underscore that I do love Australia. I was born here. It's a great country. But in these circumstances, I could probably do more for Australians and my very large supporter base here if I was in Russia, because in Russia I could very easily continue in the media space and the political space without any censorship, without any problems, without any... In fact,
so I'm an Australian, Simeon. How would you do more for me in Russia?
Well, I'll tell you, Sam.
Yes. Tell me.
You're paying $2.40 for diesel roughly at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I would make sure that Russia...
We drill.
I would make sure that we reverse the Albanese ban on Russian petrol imports. You know that Albanese banned Russian oil. Yep. However, Albanese imports all of a sudden.
Yep, we know all that.
His imports from India, Singapore. Yep. Where does India and Singapore get their oil from?
Russia.
I know. So here we are, we're copying it. And that's why the price of schooners have gone up. That's why the price of bread has gone up.
So oddly enough, you're going to Russia because you want freedom of speech, because you don't have it here in Australia.
And you can change all that.
Yeah, cheap beer and petrol by telling Putin. you've got me. I'm a supporter of you. Now, Simeon, I'm going to ask you this. This is the final thing I'm actually asking you. Do you regret scarpering, if you like, if that's a word, scarpering to the embassy to duck the charges that were put on you? If you had it over, would you not do it?
No, I think what's done, it was probably the best decision. It was a snap decision, but it was also a form of protest against
You're the only person. You're the only person paying the penalty.
I don't mind. My freedoms are restricted here, but what is one freedom which is not restricted? And here in the Russian consulate, I have full freedom of speech. No one tells me what not to say, what to say.
Well, the building.
Yeah, in the building.
Well, that's right. You can say we're all assholes and Trump and Putin. That's fine. They'll be all. You'll be speaking to preaching to the converted, mate. Of course you will be.
It is interesting that you need to go to the. I mean, as somebody who's a Putin supporter and who obviously had brought the attention of the authorities onto yourself, that you need to sort of almost go into the Russian embassy to maintain your freedom of speech. That's what's unusual. Do you consider yourself a political prisoner?
I do, and I realised that when I was arrested for the suppression order and branded a national security interest.
That moment, is the weird thing, yeah.
Well,
yeah, that was the alarm bells. Why am I a national security interest?
I'm
not being facetious when I say this. Do you think, Simeon, anyone cares that you're in the Russian embassy, deprived of your freedom? Do you think anyone cares about this, or you think there's a lot of people that actually have taken this really to heart?
Oh, it's a good question. I mean, you've got my supporter base, then you've got people that don't know me and don't care because they couldn't care less, and then you've got my opponents. Now, the second category, they probably don't care at all. But the first category, my supporters and my opponents, they do care, and my opponents really care. My opponents have been screaming from the rooftops to deport Boykov even before I entered the consulate. They've been saying this, get rid of him. He shouldn't be in Australia. He's too pro-Russian. He's too antagonistic. He's too defiant. He's so forth and so forth. He's a troublemaker. Mm-hmm. Deport him. Now, don't forget, when I was 18, I finished high school. I actually moved to Moscow. I studied there for 3 years. I studied in a place on the Lubyanka, which is a famous part of Moscow.
Yep.
I studied in the seminary, the same place where Joseph Stalin studied, in fact. And look, I know Russian life.
Are you a communist?
No, no, certainly not. I'm more of a monarchist. You know, we're from the white Russians. Who,
yeah, you're the white Russian. Russian white Russian,
beautiful.
Yeah. Czarist.
Yeah,
the Cossacks supported exactly. the white Russians, yeah. right? That's why you call yourself Cossack. Yeah.
Can you ride a horse?
I can, but I think
that's what Cossacks.
I think when I was a little bit lighter, I was still playing footy. I couldn't get on a horse. These days, sorry for the
maybe
horse.
They should take you to the airport on a horse, mate. You know, it could be like symbolic. You know,
now Simeon Bolkov. I don't know where we've got with this. It's been really interesting to chat to you. I don't know what to make of your situation or what you're on about or why you've gotten so much trouble. Somewhere between what you say and what we're asking you, there's the underlying facts. but I really appreciate you, mate. I hope things work out for you so that eventually you can live your life. But I appreciate you coming on You Cannot Be Serious and having a chat to us. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. All the best.
Thank you, mate.
I'm hoping around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you